friends, Ricky here with another episode of WYFP. If you need to know what that means, you can ask anybody, but don't ask me. I might be rolling solo today because I'm doing this at a little bit of a different time and for a different length because I'm out in New York this week hanging out with the family. But I didn't want to leave this series behind. I've been having a lot of fun doing this all this summer. Feel pretty confident that after Labor Day and the AID summer season passes, that I want to bring this back for the fall run of episodes. And when I do so, maybe, you know, working on sometimes having a co-host in here. So there's different people, different opinions to talk to, different views on whatever the topic is. But one thing I've been enjoying is looking at previous episodes and figuring out what inside of this episode can we talk about at a longer length. And most importantly, or I should say more specifically, the interview episodes where, you know, you've only got a limited amount of time with somebody. You're trying to rip through as many topics as possible. You're trying to keep them, you know, interested and not knowing where the conversation is going. That's kind of my technique to get people to say things in a different way or tell a different version of their story, is not to just ask them their life story in a linear, you know, manner of how did you get started? Where are you from? What college did you go to? I don't give a fuck about any of that bullshit. I want to know like the real heart of it. And last week we talked to an amazing designer by the name of Dan Greta. If you haven't heard the episode, I would highly recommend to go check it out. But one of the things that I did with Dan is I talked to him about his art style, which is phenomenal. Like, I really love people that are, I think, illustrators that happen to illustrate type. And, you know, some people might say, well, it's a typographer, but the type of work that Dan Greta does is so specific. It's so overbuilt and constructed that to call it typography, a lot of people think, well, you know, you're working with fonts, you know, you're doing a lot of, you know, sort of text alignment, text placement, but this is a whole other thing where it's an art piece. It's an illustrated art piece. Just the subject matter happens to be typography, and it looks phenomenal in the way that he does it. And one of the most fascinating things in that conversation that is going to be the topic for today's episode is Dan's relationship with freelance. And this is a story we've talked about now for about 1,400 episodes. This is AID 1415. Got a little bit out of order with my travel schedule. But over 1,400 plus episodes, we have really heard every viewpoint on freelance. There are a lot of people that are in an institutional type career setting, and looking out the window at freelance looks fun. It looks exciting. It looks like all this freedom to get to pick whatever projects you want to do, work for yourself, pick your own schedule, and all those things are true. But also people that are sitting in that institutional design setting where you've got a boss and creative directors and all these various people that oversee you. One of the downsides that comes with that is, or I should say one of the things that maybe scares those people from going into that path is the idea that there are a lot of fearful things in going to full-time freelance, such as you have the fear of, how am I going to get paid? Will I have enough work? How will all of this come together? And it gets to be a very interesting thing where, okay, I have this job. I like the idea of the freedom. And I also want to be able to move forward and do some of these things. But at the same time, there's no way financially I can afford to do so. Or what if I take this risk and the money's not there? So I think a lot of times what keeps people out of the freelance game is a lot of that self-doubt, or maybe a little bit self-confidence in, can I beat this day job that I'm in? And there were moments in my career, moments in my life where I would have bet the farm on always go freelance, but I've met a lot of people over this wild journey and I'm like, you know, maybe this person's doing it right. Maybe this person has found the proper blend for them and their talents. So what got me into thinking about today's subject is when I interviewed Dan Greta, here is somebody that he's walked away from freelance. He's gone into a boutique agency. But everybody would agree, it's not by a lack of talent, because the kid is phenomenal in what he does, as I talked about earlier in the episode. And if you haven't seen his work, go look at his work. I'm a huge fan of it. So it's never going to be a lack of talent for somebody like that. But the hard thing about freelance is that it wears you down because it wears you out. Because you are on a treadmill and you keep going and going and going. So today, in my little one-man debate, am I opening here? The idea of freelance or death, like I'm going to do this the whole time. I'm going to keep running this game. You know, I'll never go work for the man, which is one mindset, which I can respect. And that's the camp that I think that I'm permanently stuck in. Or there's the other mindset for people that go freelance where it's like, I think this is the death of my freelance. I think that I've hit enough dead ends. I've hit enough problems with cash flow. I've hit enough exhaustion. I've hit enough of saying, I'm getting older and my dreams don't feel any closer. And I think there's a lot of legitimate ways or a lot of justifiable ways when people say, I think this is where me and freelance part ways. So today I wanted to talk about a tale of three Dans. Because with Dan Greta, we have a phenomenal amount of talent. And I don't know the specifics on why he exactly got out of freelance, but when I did the interview with him, we talked a little bit about how at his new job that he loved that he was just able to be a creative and he wasn't bogged down by that second part of being a freelancer. You get to spend less time doing the fun stuff if you really want to build your business, because there's so many emails, so many contracts that you better be sending out and not cutting corners on the contracts. That's the stupidest place to cut corners, and it's the easiest place to cut corners because it's not fun and it's not sexy. There's the accounting matter of it all. There's the, oh my God, I got to keep active on social media. I got to keep active on these stupid websites like LinkedIn or Dribbble, wherever it is that I think that I might get that next client, the next opportunity from. So it's just a constant go, 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 go. And that part of the career takes away from the fun part. And I often found myself always trying to struggle with, well, let's say that I get in at 8 o'clock and I just power through the emails, power through the accounting, power through the schedule and all that stuff. Could I go eat lunch and come back at 12:30 and go from 12:30 to like 6:30 or 8:30 and just do the art part? Well, that works out until something explodes, until you get a call from a client or this deadline gets moved up or there's somebody who's hard to get on the phone and the only, you know, they're that type of person. Like when they call, you just got to stop what you're doing because it might be 3 days before you can get them back on the line. So I was always trying to figure out what is that balance, because I hated how much time the bullshit took up. But when you look at somebody like Dan Greta, it was never a lack of talent that would make somebody like that go away from freelance. But not exactly knowing his situation, if somebody was doing amazing at something, most people don't walk away from it unless they're Jerry Seinfeld. And then that's more of like an ego trip than like my TV show so good that I doubt that if I stay here another 2 years, can I actually make it better? Like there's a self-doubt for people that go out on top. They'll say, oh, I want to go out on top. I want to just leave it when it's as good as it could be. But that's another way of saying, I'm afraid that I can't keep meeting everyone's expectations. Or I'm afraid a tremendous amount of popularity will make then that backswing of popularity. You know, the pendulum swings both ways. Oh my God, everybody loves this thing. It's the greatest thing ever. And then it swings back the back way where it's oh, this is the same shit over and over again. I don't know why everybody celebrates this. I mean, the double-edged sort of popularity is as soon as you are considered, cool, trendy, popular, whatever noun you want to use or adjective you want to use, on the backside of that are people that are willing and ready to take you down because they despise that popularity. And so when we look at someone like Dan Greta, I would just suppose that maybe it wasn't going the way that he wanted to. And that's how we backed down. And I made a lot of career decisions in my life. And none of them were because I was too successful at what I was doing. You know, I enjoyed being a designer, but I felt a lot like Indiana Jones. I felt like I was running and that big fucking ball was behind me every single day. And no matter how hard I ran, I was always just barely sliding out as the ball was coming behind me. And it just got exhausting. It got fatiguing. And I saw a way to use my talents in a better direction. And also With the landscaping of podcasting becoming what it is, I've evolved over into doing some video content. Like, I always want to be evolving, and I think I always will be, because I'm a survivalist. And so I don't know any other way. I don't know getting a job. I just got to always project, like, well, if this thing falls apart, better have another thing to jump to. But at first, Dan, the story of Dan Greta, tremendous amount of talent, a tremendous amount of talent that probably takes a lot of time, and ultimately decided that he didn't want to freelance anymore, wanted to go someplace and get a different rig. But our next Dan is the story of Dan Stiles, a guy who I would say is going to for sure be a lifelong freelancer, somebody who I don't see stopping doing freelance at any time. I think he's pretty much settled into it. There's a price. I know my buddy Dan Stiles. There's a price for him to go be a creative director or something somewhere, but it's a lot of money. But when we look at Dan Stiles, a one-man Dan, and how he's out running his business, he's really been able to get design down to an efficient execution. And when I first met Dan, I thought, man, I'm putting too much work in. This guy's designs are so basic and easy. Like, why would you spend so much time trying to be like Daniel Danger and putting every board in the building when Dan Stiles realized that a square and a triangle is the building as long as you put some windows and a door on there? And so when I was like, yeah, I'm going to fucking do what this guy is doing, it looks easy. I realized, oh, it's not easy. It's very complicated getting it down to an abbreviation of the idea, just enough data to convey what it is that you're trying to say. But with Dan Stiles, there is an efficiency and there is a lot of wit, a lot of intelligence there. And so he's able to see not only the problem solving of this is the book that I've been hired to do a cover for, but this is the budget. This is the client. He's able to actually look at the back end metrics and design with those restraints, not against those. He's able to take that data and make decisions with it that make the project efficient in every degree. I've been fortunate enough to stay at Dan's house when I've gone up to Oregon to do a bunch of episodes, to record and do interviews. I've seen how the man works. It's incredibly efficient. Whereas I see the business side as this nasty, evil side that I just want to put out that fire as quick as possible so I can go do the fun side that is creativity. Dan looks like the Mercedes-Benz logo. Everything has its own space, and each space is created equally. And he has such an efficiency of just going from thing to thing to thing. And they could be such different parts of the human brain, but he's able to do that. And I think the reason why Dan Stiles is on a path of never going back to a job, because he did start out in a more institutional setting where he was the junior designer for an older designer and a two-man shop. I don't see him going in that direction because he has been able to master both sides of that workload. He's been able to make more and more money and do better and better work. And I think what Dan has going for him, which is one of the number one things anyone can have going for them, is intelligence. I think to be a successful creative, you have to be intelligent. If you want to go the freelance game, you can't be emotional, because when you're emotional, you put all of your energy into your work. And the emails and the direction from clients and the lack of payment or payment terms, it hurts your feelings because you're too emotional. It's a lot like being a Jedi, right? You kind of got to be one with the universe or the dark side will get a hold of you. And it'll take your mind to some pretty dark places. There's nothing worse than working all the time and being broke because either you're mismanaging your business or your clients aren't respecting you and sending the checks on time. I think you have to be willing to set up an efficient balance in your life. And I think that balance is really set to stone, and that plan comes actionable with a lot of intelligence, a lot of planning, and trying not to let it be too emotional of a journey to get to where you want to go. I would put Jason Edmondson in this category, but his name's not Dan. But also, Jason's so emotional. That's a guy that's always going to work for himself, but he's so emotional. He's so obsessed that even though he has a really, really great income, I worry about how hard Jason is working himself. I worry about his balance of life. I worry about his sanity. So he can't be in this conversation because he's not one of our three Dans, but a worthy example to bring up because he's relatable. So we have Dan Greta, phenomenal type illustrator, maybe putting too much into it. We don't quite know, but he walks away from freelance. We have Dan Stiles, a one-man Dan of efficiency on what we see in front and behind of the poster, what sits on the stage and what's backstage. And then our third and final Dan is Dan Culkin. I think if you don't have the intelligence and the wit that Dan Stiles has, no offense to my friend Dan Culkin, because he is easily the most talented person that I know as far as it comes to modern day illustration and construction. But that's all Dan wants to do. So left by his own devices, Dan Culkin might drift or skew a little bit more Dan Greta than he does Dan Stiles. But Dan Saving Grace is his business partner, Nathan Goldman, a guy who understands patience, perseverance, the long way to get to someplace great, a guy who understands managing a calendar and a schedule, has an eye for design, is a good typographer, could hold his own on his own, but understands his balance with Dan Culkin, as Dan is the artist and Nathan is the business mind. And each has a little bit of that in their personality, in their mindset. But the reason why I bring up Culkin is because I think that that is the missing formula for some people that can't go in on freelance on their own, is having that business partner, that other side. Not everybody is as smart as Dan Stiles or as diverse as Dan Stiles to do both. Some people want to just jump in and do one thing, and there's nothing wrong with that. As we look at Dan Greta, he found that solution by having his Nathan Goldman be a boutique agency so that he could focus on what his passion is and let somebody take care of the rest. There's really no wrong way to do freelance. The only wrong way is the way that either A, fucks up your credit and your bills and your mental health and your personal health and drives you nuts. That's a wrong way to do it. If you're too proud to quit, that's a wrong way to do it. But there's also the right way, which is the way that's perfect for you, the way that's efficient for you. And I know that a lot of times some of us get so headstrong that changing our plan looks like defeat. Changing our plan is admitting that we failed. And I know that we're artists and quote unquote, we're not competitive, but fuck if we don't have a lot of pride. And fuck if we're not competitive. You may not be competitive with your peers, but I know you're competitive with yourself. That's why you're doing good work, because you always thrive to be better. And you want to be better than your clients want you to be, because it matters more to you than it matters to them. The reason why I wanted to talk about these three different talented designers, that any one of us would be lucky to be any three of these men, is because they really represent a wide spectrum of how you navigate this. And I know sometimes it can be frustrating. I know sometimes you can want to give up. And one of the joys that I've taken in doing AID over the last handful of years is offering all of those different perspectives. But the problem with doing interviews is you're only talking to one guy at once. And for that 90 minutes, that perspective, that path, that pursuit can end up sounding like it's the perfect one because that's the one that we're talking about. So I thought it would be fun today is to take three people who I'm pretty well versed in their story, got a good read on how they're running their shops and running their minds, running their lives and running their careers, and just sort of in one conversation, lay them side beside one another so that you yourself could do a comparison. And so you yourself could realize maybe I'm one of these guys, maybe I fit in between this guy and that guy, but to also just give yourself that freedom of saying, maybe this isn't for me. Maybe I would be better taking a job. Or maybe I really love freelance, but I don't exactly like the art part, or I'm not as good as the art part as I am at the business part. Maybe I should buddy up with somebody. I just know that we live in a complicated time that doesn't show any signs of slowing down or getting less complicated. And I know that there's so much pride that goes into these decisions that I thought it would be interesting to just sort of put three different stories out there, give you those three different perspectives, and let you think to yourself, where do I fit in these? Because one of the advice that I've always given my interns back in the day when I had a shop was I always told people, and I've said this 1,000 times on the show, so it's, you know, not a big reveal, but it's important to today's conversation. If you're going to do an internship, I would go work for the smallest, brokest guy you could find. And if you could do a second internship, I'd go do it for the biggest, richest place that you could find. So that you see your industry from each end. And I know I'm focusing on money, but Bricky, it's about the creative. Fuck that. If there's not money flowing through, the stress, the burden is going to outweigh everything. And just because there's money there also doesn't mean that it's a happy place to be, because who knows what taste of that you're getting. But if you could go to a huge place and a small place, you will at least have run the length of the industry and you'll know different perspectives to see it from. And that will give you a lot of peace in wherever you end up, because you won't theorize, as I started this conversation, sitting in an institutional setting, looking out a window at freelance, like either you're not good enough to do it, or you're too afraid to do it, or you don't know if you should do it. You know what's on the other side of that pane of glass when you've at least lived there once. And the goal for this was to simply look at three different people, three different talented people, and realize there's so many different ways to do this. Take the time to gut check yourself. Take the time to check your career. Where are you at? Are you hitting the goals that you have? Are you getting the type of jobs that you want? Are you making the type of money that you want? Are you finding the type of balance of life that you want? Are you hitting your goals in life? Do you have a retirement? Do you have a savings account? Do you own your car? Do you have a house? Who's going to wipe your butt when you die or when you're close to dying? That's my big one I'm working on. I'm trying to get a butt wiper for my 70s and 80s. I don't know what age you need people to wipe your butt, but I'm worried about it. And I know that I make that like a joke, but that's what I'm worried about right now. I ain't got no kids. I got to find somebody to wipe my butt because I'm not always going to be able to. But you should take an inventory of where you're at and how far you are from your goals, both monetary and professionalism of the type of work that you're getting. And when you take that inventory of how far you are from your goals, maybe you're there. Maybe you've already reset several goals. Maybe you're crushing your goals. That's great. Keep going. But if your goals feel far, like they're not in reach, maybe it's time to reevaluate. Not the goals, but the path that you're taking to get there. Don't go, oh, well, you know, my freelance isn't exactly what I want it to be. And, you know, my goal used to be is to have a savings account with $50,000 in it. So maybe I should just set my goal as a savings account with $5,000 in it. No, don't do that. Figure out how you get to what your goal was. Figure out how far you need to go and reassess. Don't be afraid to ask for help. Don't be afraid to partner up. Don't be afraid to go in on your own. Don't be afraid to take a job when it's the appropriate time to be someone that takes a job. If you've hung out with me on this wild ride, you've seen me several times pivot and adapt. Adaptation is a way to be a survivor. Stubbornness, staying in one place and staying at the party too long, is a great way to be a loser, to be someone who fails, because your pride or your ego or your fear of failure was setting you in one spot for too long and not allowing you to go someplace else. Food for thought. It's never a bad time to evaluate who you are, where you want to go, how you think you're going to get there. And last but not least, how far away do we feel like we are from being there? It's a worthy cause. It's a worthy thing. It's a worthy conversation that you should maybe have with yourself. And then after maybe a little depressing time, you might feel better. Manny, what's up, brother? How are you doing today?
Dude, you're hitting me where I live, or where I have lived, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, when I saw you show up today, I was thinking, like, this is a guy who swung out in the freelances and ultimately decided that you were happier taking a job someplace.
Yeah, not for lack of trying, dude.
I get that. And I hope I didn't tell the story that way. I mean, I think.
I guess if we're talking about those options that you tossed out there, I would have been better off in a Dan Culkin setting with a guy that had some business sense, mm-hmm. because left to my own devices, I'm happiest just chucking out work.
Yep.
Like, I tried full-time freelance a couple times and was never able to really line up the clients enough to really make it a thing. The first time I did it, it was handed to me because we had signed the paperwork and were about to move into a new apartment. And literally as that was happening, I was being let go from my full-time job.
Yeah.
So I was handed that opportunity and was like, look, I'm not going to not look for a job, but I'm also going to try to get work to keep things floating. Mm-hmm. So it worked out okay, but never really, I mean, literally just above water the entire time.
I think a lot of people get in that spot where they're just above water. You know, I always refer to it as making just enough money to stay in debt. And you can feel like, oh, there's momentum here. You know, I'm just one project. I'm one break away from, you know, I'm just one client or one job away from that next level. And you got to be careful with how long you keep telling yourself that. And that's why I thought it would be nice to do an episode where you encourage people to take an inventory on their life and their goals and where they're at. Because, you know, maybe if you take my challenge and do this little inventory on yourself, you know, it's like, is freelance your lifeblood or is it, you know, is it looking harder? Write it down in a notebook and revisit it 6 months from now.
Is it your lifeblood or is it sucking you dry?
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it, Manny. But yeah, I mean, you have to sort of evaluate, you know, where you're at in this month of August and then come back around to it 6 months later, you know, come back around to it in February and say, you know, I really thought about this 6 months ago and here I am still treading water. How long do I want to do this? How long do I want to keep waiting for this, you know, golden job to land in my lap or this golden opportunity to land in my lap? And how many near misses can I have before, you know, I'm one bad car wreck or lump in my neck away from being in a really fucking bad spot? I mean,
yeah,
we get older and the responsibility gets greater.
Yeah. Yeah, literally. I'll never forget this. We used to do, instead of craft fairs, we would do Comic-Cons. Mm-hmm. as artists and whatever. And we had a particularly, we had friends in town who were also, you know, tabling and whatever. And we'd both done really, really well that weekend. And it was a, you know, a better than usual kind of thing. And we had some cash in our pockets, and I kid you not, he got a flat tire and I had some kind of engine trouble. So we had to hand that money right over to somebody else. Like, it was, the car was fine the day before. Yes. Everything was cool. But the Sunday after the thing was done, we were handing that cash to somebody.
I mean, everybody has been there. Everybody knows that feeling. And that's why the goal is to try to get a lifestyle where the cash is coming in at such levels that things like that are just an annoyance and not like a setback or push it back to even. And, you know, there's one of the blessings about getting older and pursuing, you know, wherever you can overlap passion and profitability is that, you know, I think about it all the time now at this moment in my life where, you know, a stupid bill will come up. Like our dog, you know, we had to get all these teeth removed out of her mouth. And it was the type of thing where we could ignore it and her mouth would continue to smell like a pile of trash. And it would probably take years of her life off, or we could get the teeth fixed and, you know, she'd be happier. She'd be healthier. She wouldn't smell like a pile of trash, and who knows how much longer it could make her live. And so we just said, all right, well, it's gotten bad. Let's go do it. And I think I thought, you know, it was an $1,800 dental bill for a fucking dog. And there are moments where that would have had to go on a credit card, and I'd have to figure out, you know, like, well, if I pay this much, I can get it done in like 6 months, and then there'd be something that would pop up. So now it gets stretched over to 8 months. I mean, there had been moments in my life where an $1,800 bill would be fucking devastating. And it just feels good to make the decisions where you're like, well, that sucks, but I love the fucking dog and I hate the smell of trash mouth. So what am I going to do? And you just pay it and you move on with it. And, you know, $1,800 is different to everybody. You know, to some people right now, that is the most huge amount of money that they can't imagine having to cover a bill. And somebody's listening right now, I'm like, fuck, man, how broke were you growing up that $1,800 is a big deal to you? You know, it can feel like, it can feel like $18,000 or $18. Money is just like temperature. You know, you think this is cold until you go someplace that's really cold. You think this is hot until you go burn on the fucking sun and die. You think that was way hotter than Palm Springs. So money is such a relative thing, but you can't let that relevance take away from your stress. So in your situation, you and your buddy are like, fuck yeah, we sold some stuff at the Comic-Con. We slung some product. We made some cash. Fuck. Engine trouble and a flat tire, and now we're back to zero. That makes you reevaluate. Like, what am I doing here that I'm just making enough to, like, cover an oopsie bill, and now I'm right back to fucking baseline zero again?
Yeah. I got lucky, and I landed where I landed now, and I followed your lead, and instead of doing broke summer, I did broke first of the year.
Nice.
And it's been fun, but now that's turning into, like, I'm hearing that siren song, but I know better and I'm old enough to know that just because things are picking up, I'm going to wait and nothing's really going to change. Like,
well, hold on. Because let's break down what you're talking about, because you've been a little bit vague here and I don't know if everybody can figure out. So the idea of broke summer that I gave people, because not everybody listens to every episode, shame on them. Broke summer, the idea was just spend a summer, put in the extra hours, working the weekends, but building this thing for yourself so that when the fall comes and the world...
Specifically for yourself.
Right. And when the world comes back to...
Build the project you've always wanted, yeah.
Exactly. And when the world comes back to normal in the fall, you built this thing, right? And like, so in the summer, everybody kind of goes away. Businesses kind of go at a little like slow motion, but you show up in the fall with this new thing. So you did that over the winter. What were you building?
Wanted to do more mascot stuff. I had done graphic design as a sort of a need more than anything, and a sort of a I can do it, not I love it.
Right, because you're more of an illustrator, right?
Yeah. So I said, let me focus on this thing and let me take this weird passion that I have for mascots, old school stuff, sports stuff, all kinds of stuff, and channel it into something for myself. So I started posting one a week. And that went really well. And then I had one hit, and it hit on this website, and they put it on a hat, and that gave me the opportunity to talk to some other people about it, and like gigs started coming in for it. It funny enough, this is a New Era, by the way. I know you have a history with them.
But, they're a fine company. They just sucked. That's fine.
Yes, they do. And currently they suck extra. But yeah, it was fun and it was cool and everything. But it's growing. The sort of I did some stuff for some people that they'd asked for stuff, and that is kind of snowballing. But I don't want to do freelance. I want to do paid illustration stuff as sort of a hobby.
That's a good idea.
I want to keep it small enough that I can put it in my pocket, and if I have to squish it, I'll kill it myself. But
well, hold on for a second. I don't know that we want to keep it so small, because that's kind of a negative way to go into something. But what I would say is this: let's rephrase that. Mm-hmm. I got a job. I like it. I want to do illustration for the sake of keeping it fun. I don't want it to become, you know, a main thing or chase it too hard, because that kind of ruins the fun, ruins the economics of things. But what you would hope to do if your illustration thing starts to take off is you would hope that you can start picking the projects, picking the prices, and just taking what time you have to dedicate to it and make that time more richer and a better experience. But we don't want to kill it. We want to nurture it, but we want to make sure that dollars for donuts, that you're getting your investment out of that.
Yeah, definitely. Keep it as a really healthy potted plant.
There you go.
On the windowsill. I like that. I like that way of thinking of it.
Hopefully it's a marijuana plant so that we can sell those leaves or get fucking high. Choice is yours, Manny. Choice is yours. Whatever you need to do, bud. Whatever you need to do. I think this is the first time I've ever said anything remotely pro. I don't even talk about pot. I don't even know why my mind went there. I guess I was down in San Diego too much this weekend.
Yeah, you've been around the dispensaries too much, man.
Yeah, I mean, throw a rock, I'm going to hit one in my neighborhood. It's like every time a business closes, I'm like, oh, they should just put a sign out front that says future pot dispensary, because I don't know how much pot needs to be dispensed in this fucking town. But no, I like the plan of what you're doing. And let's sort of do your life math in reverse now, Manny. When you were chasing the illustration as your full-time gig, go in your mind's eye how happy you were at that moment. And now compare that to how happy you are now doing it more as a professional hobbyist, where it's something that you do. You do it for money when that arises, or you do it for yourself, but you do it with a lot less pressure and you're getting to do the type of work you want. Like, what is your comparison on the happiness versus then and now?
Oh, 100% happier now.
Yeah.
100% happier now. I'm picking the gigs specifically so that I can be myself when I do them. I'm encouraged to bring that to the table for the clients that I do choose, the clients and the projects that I do pick. Want what I'm bringing to the table. That time that I took to establish a look for myself paid off in dividends, and it allowed me to sort of grow a style, which I've never really had.
Yeah, that's great.
Like a discernible style.
That's great.
So that's been fun.
So it sounds like in The Broke Winter, what you're able to do that what you weren't able to do when you were doing it full time. When you're doing it full time, all of your projects get shifted and shaped, and you get directed as a creative in whichever direction you need to go for survival. But in the broke winter or the broke summer, whichever season somebody decides to do this, your project directions, you call those shots, like what we were talking about last week where we broke down the Skinner conversation. So when you're just working for clients and taking whatever job you can to pay the bills and to keep afloat, you don't have time to interject a personal style. But when you reset the clock and did it on your own time, you prioritize the most important thing that any illustrator can have: recognizability in the market.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a big part of it. I was, when I was chasing the money to pay rent, I was doing the Cheesecake Factory thing. I had a giant menu and bring me whatever crazy shit you want. And I'll try to match that style. I'll do something in the style that you want, you know, whatever. And just, it has to get done that way. And now, you know, I'll turn down to something that I don't want to do because I don't want to do it.
Perfect.
You know, it's my golf game. It's my tee time.
It's perfect.
I pick where I play.
I kind of stopped listening once you said Cheesecake Factory. I know a lot of people, when they hear that, they think of, sitting inside of the restaurant and holding that menu and ordering. I just think of being in Hammer's backyard and looking like, what are you ordering us? Mark, how hungry are you? That's the famous Hammer quote. How hungry are you? I'm like, 7. Oh, okay. I got you dialed in. All right, everybody. I want to thank you for listening to the free version of today's episode. I'm going to hop into the Circle of Trust and talk to a couple of other gents, but I hope you enjoyed listening to this. We put these out every Wednesday. It's called WIFP, where members of the Circle of Trust can show up. And we kind of, it's turned into a fun little thing where we take interviews and kind of break them down in more detail and kind of talk more about, you know, things that move fast in a way to where it's like, you know, when you're in an interview, that's like the only reality that exists. It's fun to take some of those topics over here and put them into the multiverse where there's many opportunities for things to go many different ways. And speaking of many different ways, if you want to hear the second part of this or hundreds of other episodes, oh, almost at thousands, but it's 1400s of episodes, become a member today over at AID.network. Become a member of the Circle of Trust, and not only will you unlock the archive in the second part of today's conversation, but you also get the invite to be on these calls, to be one of the co-hosts of WIFP, and to be one of our correspondents out there on the front lines of creativity. Friends, if this is where we part ways, I'm so glad you showed up, and I will see you back here next week, or tomorrow if you listen to Hammer Time, which I highly suggest. You listen to Hammer Time because it's a fucking good time. All right, now that we're in the COT, I have got David Gallo and Don Post with me. I perfectly and purposefully ignored both of you because you showed up so late that I didn't want to have to restart what I was saying. And even Manny, who showed up 4 minutes late, when I'm the only person talking and running the show, types, what did I miss? Like, I could keep going and type out to him, I can barely write my name, and I'm going to type up
the task, Mark.
Yeah, like I'm like, you guys think I'm a fucking courtroom stenographer or some shit. The fuck's the matter with that, Dave? Let's do this. Let's do this quick, man. I'm traveling. I got a lot going on. In a nutshell, the thing that keeps you at your job is
bills.
So stability.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. And oddly enough, I'd say it's more than one thing, the reality. But really quickly, so the people that I work with are great. And also the situation of us going to remote full time really just has kept me there.
Put more gas in the tank?
Yeah, a lot more. And just also too, if I need to take a break and walk off somewhere, I can do that. If I need to go feed one of the millions of cats that now live in my house. Yeah, that's a farm thing too. So yeah, it's been super helpful.
Yeah. So you like your job, you like the people that you work with, but the work from home added a whole other sort of, I guess, casually all this is that it's like, you kind of get your cake and you can eat it too, right? Like you get the constant revenue, but you have those more freedoms of, you know, I just need to go outside for 5 minutes, or I just need to eat lunch now and not in 20 minutes. Like, it just feels better to be more in control of your own destiny, huh?
Yes. Yeah, for sure. For sure. And even to a point of, during the house, hunting part of this year,
you had that flexibility you needed. You had that flexibility that you needed.
I did have that flexibility, but I also had, someone that I know was trying to poach me away from my job. And that was a main reason that conversation didn't get very far, is because they 100% were going back into the office 2 months ago.
Uh-huh.
And so I was like, well, we're staying remote indefinitely. So are you guys going to be able to, you know, move it all on that? And the answer pretty much was no.
Yeah.
And I was like,